Welcome to the Devin Nunes Podcast, breaking through the political noise, separating fact from fiction. From the San Joaquin Valley, the breadbasket of the solar system, here is your host, Devin Nunes.
Welcome back to the Devin Nunes Podcast. This week, we're going to talk about defunding the police again. We're coming to you from Fresno, right across the street, really, from Fresno State University, from Wahoo's Tacos. Great place. We're outdoors, social distancing, so we're covering all of the governor's mandates right now. I want to welcome on the show for the first time Eric Schmidt, who is a Fresno County Sheriff's deputy. He's been doing this now for over two decades. He's actually been the president of the association for 12 years and also sits on the state POR Act board. So he's been in the middle of this real fight of whether or not, you know, our politicians and our government should defund police because of this push by BLM, also known as Black Lives Matter, which pushes this very extremist agenda of cutting the police departments and sheriff's departments around the country. So with that said, Eric, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you.
I appreciate you being here. We won't shake hands or anything because of everything that's going on right now. But, you know, over the years, you've been great. You've worked with my office, bringing kind of the local issues of the Valley and law enforcement. Right. You visit Washington usually once a year. You stay in contact with us. You've been a great contact for me as a federal representative to have, and I want to thank you for all of that.
Thank you.
And, of course, thank you for your service. You went to Fresno State University right across the street. How did you, like, wake up one day and decide, well, I want to become a police officer. I want to get into this line of work?
You know, it was when I was a teenager, and it was just, you know, living in the county, we had to call the sheriffs a couple times. They came out and talked to the deputies, and it was just more of an influence that they had on me. It was that law and order, that authority. They always took care of business when they showed up. A couple times my family had to call them. We lived in the rural part of Eastern Fresno County, so, you know, that was our police. Mm-hmm. And then I interacted a couple times with them, being a backpacker and being up in the mountains on a search and rescue, and that even took me a step further. Like, wow, you can get paid to do this. This is awesome.
So for our national and international listeners, I want to say that we're just a few miles from the foothills of the Sierra Nevada mountain range. And so what Eric's talking about is that a lot of people, and we've had on the show, we've talked about Yosemite National Park and Sequoia right. Kings Canyon National Park. But a lot of people around here, if you like to backpack, it's a great place to, especially right now, it's hot in the middle of the summer. You can get up there and escape there. So just a little promo for the San Joaquin Valley, in which we get a lot of international visitors from all over the world that come here during normal times. Of course, we're not getting too many right now. But there's search and rescue, right? I mean, it's what sheriffs do. So we have that issue here in the San Joaquin Valley because we have these national parks. So I think that's just a good segue. Give us an interesting story about something you've been involved with search and rescue up in the.
You know, one of the coolest ones that I've been involved with. We had a group, a family from the Santa Cruz area, back in 2004. They went up. Beautiful day. It was in the fall, October, on a 4-day trip. So they go, first couple of days are perfect, and they wake up one morning, and there's a foot and a half of snow outside their tent, and they were trapped, and this freak storm came in and ended up snowing over 6 feet where they were at. They were at an elevation of around just shy of 10,000 feet, so they were pretty high. We searched for them for about 3 days, and finally we had to kind of pull back because we were just wearing our people out. We were able to get some National Guard help, fly us in a really good sized helicopter, and we found them. They were right on the brink of good thing we found them and rescued them and brought them back to their family. So, and they own a winery in Santa Cruz. I mean, they're a very well-known family in that area. And that has always been one of those in my mind, like, wow, we really made a difference because there was four of them there. They were helpless. They were pretty much calling it quits. There was no way out. I mean, there was 6+ feet of snow there. And that was one thing that I'm like, this is why I do this job. I mean, this is why I'm in it.
Yeah, right, and that's kind of one of the reason I bring this up, because there is a kind of some slight differences between being in the sheriff's office, being a sheriff's deputy, versus being in a police department where your boundaries are the city.
Correct.
Of what you're in, where you guys have the entire county.
Right.
And you're much more versatile in what you have to be ready to do. You have to do not just the, you know, criminal activity when right. there's a robbery or something like that. But you also have to be ready to go do this search and rescue, especially in California, where we have vast landscape yes. with national yes. parks and oceans and everything yes. else. I guess it keeps the job more interesting.
Yeah, it does, definitely. I mean, you have search and rescue, the dive team, boating unit, off-highway vehicle mounted. I mean, there's a lot of components that are just go outside of basic, like you say, driving in a city block or, you know, answering calls for service every day.
So, Eric, I want to move this to this big national debate that started with this unfortunate incident that happened in Minnesota where right. you had the murder of a young black man. And I think all of us are very frustrated over this. And I know you who work on this, you know, you've worked on it many, many years trying to keep elected officials up to date on this, but also ensuring that your sheriff's deputies and police officers can defend themselves when they need to defend themselves because right. you guys are going into very dangerous situations. And, you know, up until just in the last few months, I never believed that there would be a legitimate political movement that because of one bad apple of somebody who did something wrong and we still don't have all the history there, that we would now take and attack law enforcement all over the country with this idea of cutting law enforcement. Because I've always felt that, you know, one of the basic jobs of being an elected official is to that kind of at the very basic need that people have, no matter where you're at, they want public safety.
Right.
They want to feel like they can live in their house. And if they need a first responder, whether it's sheriff's deputy coming to their house, search and rescue, like you talked about, or a 911 call because you're having a heart attack.
Right.
They expect people to be there. And now what's happened over just the last couple months, it just amazes me that we have politicians where this has become a mainstream movement, so much so that most politicians, I would never guess this, and I'm not trying to be political here, but the Democratic Party, they won't even say that this is wrong. This is not okay to talk about. In fact, you have many of them who have embraced this concept of defunding the police.
Right.
And I've said this many times, this Black Lives Matter. That sounds like, oh, yeah, of course Black Lives Matters. All lives do matter.
Right.
But the problem is that this is a political movement. They're raising money from around the country. I think innocent people have been giving money to these organizations, thinking that that money is going to help pay the funeral bills of someone who was killed, unfortunately. And so, and then we have this other huge disparity that, you know, you're having murders in New York City. Chicago has been just such a fast pace. It's almost incredible.
Right.
The murders that are occurring in the black community, by the way, in the African-American community. And so I know it's got to be quite frustrating for you doing this your whole life, being involved. It's been your only career, right? I mean, you went from Fresno State University straight to the Sheriff's Department.
Right.
You wake up every day. What do you, I mean, I assume you did not think you were going to see this a couple months ago.
No, never, never. And, you know, it is unfortunate that one incident. I don't condone that. I mean, that kind of arrest tactic is not trained here. We don't teach that. It was inappropriate. Looking at what I saw on the news, that was inappropriate. Having said that, you have a group that has taken that to a different level, and a level that instead of addressing the issue, they've turned it into a national issue, truly. And talking about defunding police, the word defund is truly that. It's zero it out. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one of the biggest confusing things to people. The media, I don't know, really knows how to frame that, because you have politicians that want to cut, but truly defund is get rid of. It's like if you had a Starbucks card that had $100 on it and your wife said defund that card.
Right.
Okay, I zero it out. I just don't know where the interpretation has come from, because it's either black or it's white.
Well, and it's not like before the virus, this COVID catastrophe here,
yeah.
we were already having problems recruiting people,
right.
even locally here in the San Joaquin Valley, into law enforcement, because the rules are becoming tougher and tougher and tougher. Like what you said, you grew up, you had great experience with the Sheriff's Department. You said, oh, man, this is going to be an exciting job, search and rescue,
right.
backpacking, that sort of thing. And it takes a special person that wants to do those jobs. And the last thing we want to do is make you or the folks you work with make you hesitant to defend yourself or to show up on a crime scene and actually take on the criminals so that you can protect the public here.
Right.
So I assume that that's just got to be frustrating in terms of recruitment.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Because you're always looking for your replacement, right? I mean, you're not a good worker if you're not looking for your replacement, especially in this line of work. I teach at the police academy. I see the recruits coming through. And we try our best to make it as positive as we can for, you know, our training, and always talking about, like, this is the way it used to be. Now we have to train differently because of, you know, times change. Things change. People change. Demographics, whatever you want to call it. Having said that, you do have some people who have that in the back of their mind, like, maybe I don't want to do this job. Maybe I don't want to get into it. So you have the first, you know, month. You'll start with 50 recruits, and next thing you know, you're at 40.
Right. Well, and a lot of, look, we pay our public safety officials well. Right. We give you, I think, in most cases, pretty good pensions. But at
Absolutely.
The same time, you're not millionaires.
Right.
And I think that these concepts of having people held liable for, you know, something that happens on the job, where, you know, let's say you have your house paid off and you have a little 401k plan set aside, or, you know, a college tuition
right.
plan set aside for your children. I just can't imagine that you would be very easy to recruit at all moving forward if we're going to hold everybody individually liable and force you to have, like, your own insurance plans that then
right.
can, you know, cost them any type of shooting. Then, you know how this goes. Lawyers come in. The plans are there. The insurance companies are there. And what ends up happening is no one's ever going to want to fight this. It'll just be like, oh, there's an insurance plan. Let's pay them.
It'll be a settlement.
It'll just be a settlement.
Yeah.
I mean, it'll be a whole cottage industry that will develop around this.
Right.
I mean, I think it's totally nuts that these governments would think about holding you guys liable for this. And I have to imagine that's got to be a real question. And, you know, who the hell wants to go become a sheriff or a policeman when they're going to have their insurance on the
oh,
side?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. I mean, that's the whole other risk. I mean, it's the risk of how much am I willing to, you know, it's like you say, do I want to take that extra step to enforce that law, or do I just want to turn a blind eye to that and not deal with
right.
it?
Or show up and say, don't really know if I want to get in this shootout.
Right. Exactly.
Right?
Or use of force or whatever it may be.
Right.
We had an incident up in Shaver Lake on 4th of July. Our deputies on the boating unit had to call for guys on the ground to come help them. Because
so Shaver Lake, just so you know, beautiful
yes.
lake, small little town, an hour from
About an hour from Fresno, yeah.
Quite spectacular place to visit.
Yeah.
In the Sierra Nevada mountain range.
Yes, yeah. yes. And we had people from out of town come and cause a pretty big disturbance. And all it was, now it's all streaming on social media of, you know, look at this use of force. I want your badge number. I want this. I want that. Well, if you look at the clientele who's filming that, the lack of self-control is, I mean, it's unbelievable. And our deputies did an outstanding job of maintaining control and trying to calm the crowd and take the aggressor out of the mix so we don't have the problem. And that, unfortunately, people, that's police work. I mean,
so tell us about that. Was it a fight? Was it a, what are the specifics of it?
It started out as a guy on a jet ski who ran from our boating unit. Well, in a body of water, you can only go so far. So you're gonna you have to beach it. So he beaches it on his place where the rest of his group was, of about 30, and then it turns into this trying to hide him, and they pull our deputy into their crowd. So they call for more units, and the units get there. We end up getting the person, arresting him, and one other who was essentially inciting a riot, trying to get everybody in the crowd motivated to fight. And It's the sign of the times. I mean, that is what is happening. 10 years ago, you wouldn't even have seen that.
That's a frightening story.
It's very disturbing. I even watched the video.
Yeah, and this is one of those stories that you're not going to see on the mainstream media. If anything, what you're going to pick up is on social media, and it's going to make you guys look bad.
Right.
I mean, it's just what's been happening now with the invention of all these social media platforms.
Right.
And, of course, with the news media not willing to cover what actually happened because they want to show, oh, this was a dispute
right.
of some kind, when the reality was it wasn't a dispute at all.
Right.
But we're not in a time where we have a free and fair press. It's a whole other issue. But so, look, I know you guys are trying to do your best. You're trying to come up with ideas, concepts. We had on Damon Kurtz from PORAC, the
right.
Police Officers Association. You also sit on that, on the board,
right.
the statewide board. I know you guys are working on some new concepts.
Right.
Now, look, I'm not aware of anything that's broke here in the San Joaquin Valley or in California. It seems like you know, you guys have been really on the forefront of ensuring that officers get the right training.
Right.
You have the academies that you have for high school students where people that, you know, may have an interest in law enforcement. I think even the California Highway Patrol has something similar too. Mm-hmm. These have been very utilized programs, but regardless, you guys are being proactive. And you've put together, you guys are doing a commission of some kind that's looking at kind of what are other options to expand training. Why don't you talk to our audience about some of the proactive things that you're doing now?
Right. So PORAC started a group called United for Positive Reform. And we are getting in front of the issue, just as we did with some of the legislation that was passed last year, SB 230. We had to get in front of that. You have certain politicians, legislators in California, very much left, who want to change and truly go back to a lawless state. So a lot of people are talking about...
Which, that's incredible. I mean, it's incredible you're saying this. I mean, they really want to get rid of all the laws.
Oh, true. It is true. And you have people talking about reform. They're talking about wanting change. Mm-hmm. So PORAC, being the front runner and I believe change and movement, started this group. And this group is still getting off the ground. But right now we've got roughly around 30 to 35 people involved, not just law enforcement, other labor groups. We have clergy, other parts of, and I can't get too deep into it, but other parts of the community, that big business, small business. We have people from the sports industry. We have people from the Actors Guild. We have a lot of people wanting to get involved, because it's like, if you say you're, depending what group you're in, if you say you're pro-law enforcement, that's not good. But if you say you're pro-Black Lives Matter, that's good. But they're not that. And so this picking a team is not really working. And trying to say we want reform and change or defund, nobody really knows what they want. They just throw things out and, you know, hopefully something sticks. We're going to get in front. We're going to say, okay, if you truly want change, you truly want reform, let's talk about it. Let's set the table for that.
Some of the areas where there might be some improvement, like I know here in the Valley, these academies have been very, very popular for high school students.
Right.
But I know in other parts of the state of California, those programs have actually been shuttered, right?
Yeah, they've been shut down.
That's one of the ideas of bringing this back.
Right. I think we're still fortunate in the Central Valley that we have the leadership here that allows us to do high school academies, ROP programs. We have reserve academies. We have citizens academies. We give the public the opportunity to still participate in our law enforcement agencies.
And also great presence. One of the things that we do here in the San Joaquin Valley, there's always presence at the schools.
Right.
And at the school carnivals. Like, I was at my children's school carnival, and the local sheriff's deputies were there working with the children. That way you're touching these kids at a very young age, that they know, you know, we're law enforcement, here's how it works, here's, you know, we're here to help you, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I think it's worked very well. I think there's a lot of, I mean, I just can't imagine this whole idea. It's just hard for me to believe that people in this state are not pro law enforcement, pro law and order. It's a concept that's just foreign to me.
Yeah.
As somebody who's been in politics, you know, you don't run for office, but you obviously work a lot on public policy, something I thought I'd never see.
I know. As large and as the population of the state, the demographics alone, the geography alone, I mean, it runs the entire circle of California of so much difference. I mean, from race to age, I mean, and geography, everything that goes into it. It's just crazy. And the amount of tourism we have here, that you would want a lawless state, is just beyond me. I mean, it kind of goes back to my first impression as a 14-year-old kid. I saw this sheriff's deputy come and solve my problem at my house out in the country. And that stuck. That was like, wow, that made me feel good. That made me feel safe. That protected my family. And life was better. But for a minute there, I was scared.
And I think a lot of people that are probably listening to this or watching it right now, and those are really important words that you're talking about here, that this is how far this state has kind of changed. So, Eric, let me just kind of the final question that I think that folks really need to understand what's happened here in California, and that is the release of these inmates that have occurred. So we've essentially downgraded felonies to misdemeanors, and it's become almost impossible to even arrest someone for petty theft or drug abuse. And I know there's going to be some initiatives on the ballot to try to rectify some of this this fall, which is going to be amazing because you have this BLM movement that I assume is going to be on the opposite side of this. And, you know, what we've seen is an unprecedented level since all these laws have basically been watered down that we see in every community across California, a homeless problem like I've never seen in my lifetime. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I have to assume you guys are assuming that a lot of those people are normally people who should have been locked up because they all tend to have these drug problems. You know, I think we could argue, have a legitimate debate whether or not somebody who's a drug addict, whose mind has gone on drugs, do they need to be in a full security prison with everything, or could is there another way we could treat these people? But the problem here is that they're now out on the streets. And I don't think, unless you've been out here to California to see this, it's not just what you see on television in San Francisco and Los Angeles. They're everywhere. They're here in the city of Fresno. They're, you know, even in my hometown, I mean, just across the street from where I live, there's whole encampments. There's like trailer parks. There are trailers that have moved in. And nothing's being enforced.
Right.
How do you see this playing forward? You know, obviously you guys are going to try to pass these initiatives in the fall. You're supporting them.
Right.
But if these don't pass, what are we going to do with all the homeless people that are left out here?
Well, I mean, that's the big question. I mean, right now is the initiatives are there to restore accountability. I mean, that's the number one goal. Once you restore accountability, everybody's talking about this homeless problem and pumping money into it. That's great, but you have to have accountability. And with accountability comes attacking the homeless problem. So with these people, what do we do with them? Nobody really knows. We've talked about a lot of things. You can build housing. You can go put them somewhere. But what are they going to do?
They're not going to stay there.
They're not going to stay. They're going to venture out. You can't hold them there. So
this is really a challenge for the most part, not all of them, but you know, I talk to these people and I run into them, you know, right at the little convenience store where I go and I'll, you know, you can tell they're, you know, most of them have, they now have mental disabilities,
right?
But it's largely, I'm painting with a broad brush here, but it's largely because they've done some pretty harsh drugs,
right?
And their minds are now gone. But the challenge that we have here is that you can't just let these people stay on the street. And if you just go rent them a hotel room or give them public housing, nobody wants that, you know, because whatever neighborhood you're in, it's going to degrade that neighborhood.
Right.
So it's really an issue of somehow these people have to be put somewhere where they're not just, have that ability to go out and get drugs, steal, you know, loot, destroy things, sleep on people's front of their businesses and, you know, the different downtowns across California. I don't think for our national and international audience, I mean, this homeless problem is completely out of control here, which is a direct result. You know, I didn't see this coming when they were passing these laws to weaken this, but this is also similar to this BLM movement. It's the same idea that we're going to defund not just the police, we're going to decriminalize things, and we're going to let people just out on the streets.
Right.
And when you do that, you have a total disaster where now, you know, everywhere you go, you see homeless people. And I mean, I've had like three or four incidents where these people just come out, they're clearly on drugs or used to be on drugs, and they walk out in the middle of your car.
Yeah.
Like right in the middle of the street, and you almost hit them.
Yeah, I believe there is a direct nexus between letting people out of prison, decriminalizing a lot of these crimes, whereas a drug charge used to be a felony is now downgraded to a misdemeanor. So you give them a citation to keep the custody level down. There is a nexus. We never saw homelessness like this 15 years ago, 10, 15 years ago. We never saw it
like
this.
Even 5 years ago.
Yeah, even 5 years ago. We never saw it like this. But when you're kicking people out of prisons and jails, where else are they going to go? That's the clientele that's sitting out on your streets. That is not – now, there are a small percentage that are just – they're homeless helpless. They've lost their jobs. They've lost their homes. But those are the ones that want to get better. The others are – what used to be in custody and what the taxpayers were paying for them. But at the same time, now look what they're doing to your community because of the decriminalization of some of these crimes.
Right. And now with COVID, they're actually, you know, releasing more and more inmates all the time. It's just total insanity. Well, look, I want to thank you for obviously your service
to
the public and to the state of California. And I think your stories are important for the rest of the world to hear. So I want to thank you for being part
of this.
Thank
you. I appreciate it. I appreciate the opportunity for being here.
Absolutely. Eric, thanks a lot. Right. Eric Schmidt, everybody. This is Devin Nunes. We'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Devin Nunes Podcast. We invite you to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And remember, you can download this podcast on iTunes or at devinnunes.com.
Storm clouds been gathering so long, I don't know.
The darkness around us leaves no easy road.
We started wondering if every road dead ends our dreams.
Wind whips the dust up and rain's pouring down.
Good people struggling in every hometown.
We started wondering if we even matter at all. We'll take that hard road to happier days. 'Cause we kept our American faith.
Not our first trial by fire like this.
It's nothing hard work and family can't fix.
We've got the power to save it all here in our hands. We'll take that hard road to happier days. 'Cause we kept our American faith. We're already half the way there. We'll take that hard road to happier days. 'Cause we've kept our American faith.
Paid for by Devin Nunes Campaign Committee.